The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, uupinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Westchester County, New York, Executive George Latimer, a Democrat. Welcome, George Latimer. There's a lot of talk that you're going to run for governor the next time out in a year. Is that right?
Alan, I can declare that I am running for re-election to Westchester County Executive in the next 40-some-odd days, and I look forward to winning that election.
Okay. Let's talk first about remnants of Hurricane Ida, which has walloped Westchester County, and the issue of climate change. Recent flooding in New York and the Northeast is showing the vulnerability of our infrastructure, and obviously climate change before our very eyes. Has it impacted Westchester County, and how are we going to deal with it?
Well, Hurricane Ida really hit us hard, and what was particularly notable about this one, we've been through Superstorm Sandy, we've been through Hurricane Irene, and go back 30 years, Hurricane Gloria. This hurricane landed in New Orleans, you know, 1,500 miles away, and about a week before it got to us. So none of us thought it would be anything more than just a bad night of rain. But the intensity of the rain overextended, you know, what our capacity to drain rainwater is. We got 8 inches within a very short period of time frame, Alan, and that backed up all of our streams and creeks. We got floods of water coming down average streets that we never expected to see it before. I know they categorize storms by the number of year frequency, 100-year storms, 40-year storms. I think that's a bogus way of doing it. They should do it the way they do hurricanes, Category 1 up to Category 5, Category 5 being the highest. If that's the case, we got a Category 4 flooding storm that hit us, and you know, we're looking at infrastructure improvements that we need to make, but I'm not sure what can be done when you get that much rain in that short a period of time.
What do you have to do in your job to make life less miserable for people?
Well, there are some things we can do and some things that take a certain amount of money for which local governments can provide some of it, but we desperately need the federal government and to some extent the state government to be there as well. We need to be able to improve our sewer treatment plants. We have 7 of them in Westchester County. Our suburban fellows have many more. And when the water rises in the Hudson River or the Long Island Sound, we run the risk of those plants shutting down and having a backup of sewerage. We did not have that happen this time, but that is a vulnerability for a future storm. The money we need are in the millions of dollars of capital. We're prepared to spend a certain portion of that, but we need the state and the federal government to be our partner in being able to make those upgrades necessary. That is a clear and present concern. We know that we can shut down certain roadways when they flood. The Bronx River Parkway, Hutchinson River Parkway, they're called river parkways for a reason. There's a river right next to them. And as they say on your wedding day, the two shall become as one. We get enough rain and the river and the parkway is one big river. And in those cases, I don't think enough engineering money solves that problem. But there are things that we can do in parts of our community to deal with the ponding effect. We can create larger retention areas upstream of these various places. We can improve the channelization. I know this is real dry, boring stuff, but it's the stuff of what stops flooding. And a certain amount of dredging will help us along the way. But when we look at climate change, we're looking at more hurricanes that are more intensive. And the response on climate change doesn't come from a county or a state. It comes from a worldwide commitment to change the greenhouse gas things. We're doing what we can do in Westchester by converting our bus fleet from diesel to electric. And, you know, things of that are very proximate in nature. But there's no question that we're getting more severe weather. Look at the firestorms out west. You know, we haven't seen the kind of frequency and widespread nature of wildfires the way we have in recent years. So it will take capital improvements. There are positive things we can do. And then to some extent, we're in the hands of Mother Nature.
It sounds to me, George, like you would be a good governor. But let's leave that alone. Let's leave that alone for a minute. When you ask the feds and you ask the state for their help, what kind of answers are you getting?
Well, you know, recently we've gotten very good answers. I can't say it was that way, you know, under the prior federal administration. Governor Hochul, who's been in office for less than a month, was here in Westchester along with Senator Schumer and Senator Gillibrand. They looked at the conditions. They made the immediate declarations that they had to make. They asked the feds to get involved immediately, which the Biden administration did. So we were able to set up FEMA disaster recovery centers in Yonkers and in Mamaroneck, which we needed for our people to be able to come and file forms, make it easy for them, and so forth. So the immediate response to the storm was very much there. And sometimes, Alan, it is just like down-home practical. We have debris that has to come out of houses that have been flooded. It goes on the street curb. The local village, town, city picks it up, but it brings it to a transfer station. The county has to take it from there to the burn plant, and we need the approval of the state to run the burn plant 24 hours in order to get rid of all this stuff. And in these kind of little details, or we need enough storage area, which we don't have enough garbage dumpsters to store. That's when the state comes in and helps us in a practical way, and we're able to get the garbage off the streets, stop there being a public health crisis to go along with the flooding crisis. And people don't see these things, but they know when it's not done. You know, when the garbage piles up on the street, they know that. They see that. So we have to be able to work efficiently and effectively, and it comes intergovernmentally between different levels of government. We don't have any time to, you know, have egos and sit on our pride and just do whatever has to be done. And we did get the support from the state that we needed during this most recent crisis.
County Executive George Latimer, let me ask you this. The schools, nothing seems to be getting people angrier. Should kids wear masks? Should the schools be open? Can you take us on a little tour of where that is now?
Well, you know, the unfortunate part, you know, Alan, and you've covered this with other interviews with other people, so I'll take a bit of a macro view. This pandemic has been politicized. It was politicized in a way that I have never seen. I was a little kid during the era in which the polio vaccine was discovered. It was a wonder drug. It saved me and my generation of kids in the 50s, and we took the vaccinations. I mean, as a kid, I didn't want a vaccination, but mom and dad made us do it, and it saved us from getting polio, from getting whooping cough and all these different things. When this pandemic hit, immediately it seemed, because President Trump tried to downplay it for his reasons, and I guess he felt that it messed up his narrative of the big, beautiful economy that he had as of February 2020. And he immediately started to make it seem as if that if you were trying to fight the pandemic in practical terms, you weren't American. You know, you were putting on masks as people do in Asia, that type of thing. And I found it objectionable because, you know, first and foremost, I have a practical mind about how we solve problems. And I found that we can work across the aisle, we can solve things when we deal with the reality of the problem and not the ideology of the problem. So that really set things in motion. Now you have people now who are a year and a half into this, and they see this pandemic ideologically. I don't want to wear a mask because you're telling me not to do it. I don't want to be vaccinated because you're telling me to do it, and it's political, when in fact, it's a matter of science. We can prove that more vaccinated people, we've had a very good vaccination rate in Westchester County. We're up around 85% now of our adults 18 and over. We have less hospitalizations and less fatalities from COVID because we have a higher percentage of people vaccinated. And yet there are people that still argue, don't vaccinate, don't mask. Now, I've learned over the years, I think we all have learned, that when you tell somebody to do something in a hostile environment, they're less likely to do it rather than more likely to do it. So we've taken the tack in our county government that we are trying to show that we can be persuasive. After all, I was a sales and marketing executive before I wanted to public office. And when you're in sales, you can't compel the client to sign your contract. You have to convince them. So we've been trying to convince people. We've had good success in getting vaccinations and masks. But this sort of absolutist, I don't want to wear masks, and my kids don't want to wear masks. Well, you know, kids don't want to do homework, and kids don't want to go to school sometimes. You know, it's really a question of what the parents lead and show them. So we have a certain amount of the anti-mask element. We haven't mandated masks in schools, but by the same token, we see the health care benefit of it. And if kids are not vaccinated under the age of 12, they're more likely to get the disease. And that is just a fact of science. And so what I make of it is that we have to have an honest dialogue with people to show them why these things are needed and push back against ideology that tells us you can't do this and you can't do that because of politics.
Why can't we just say do it? When World War II, you had to go into the army, whether you liked it or not. There are lots of examples of when the government tells people that for your own good, you have to do it. That's the role of government. So why not just tell them, put masks on your kids and send them to school?
Well, the problem is now, because the country is divided as it is, and New York, even though it's, you know, a blue state, still has plenty of red splotches in it. And you harden that portion of the electorate that just doesn't believe it. So I do think that the decision to make it happen has to be accompanied by dialogue and by overcoming objections to the greatest extent possible. And I think if you can, you order it, you know, Mayor de Blasio ordered it as first thing out of the box. We spoke to each of our different unions and talked to them and convinced them to work with us on a vaccination initiative before we ordered anything. And I think we got better compliance. So it's a combination, because it is a democracy. You do have people that have their own opinion. Try to show them that this is a necessity. And the more people that get to agree with you and do it, then the less amount of objections you have when you do, in fact, have to mandate it. And you mandate it as the crisis, you know, rises. If we're at, in our county, our peak infection was about 12,000 active cases of COVID, and we almost hit that peak again after the holidays last winter. Right now, we're about 2,300 cases, and we've risen a little bit, but we haven't hit that peak. When you hit that maximum peak, then you're in a position to say, look, we're at a crisis point now. We've explained to you what the circumstances are. This is why we're mandating it, as opposed to right out of the box, your mandate. It's a tricky thing. You know, it's sort of like, not that I could do this, but being a quarterback, knowing when to throw the ball hard and short, when to loft it long, when to read the defense. And I think that's a lot of what public office is about. It's reading the moment and trying to calibrate your response to the moment so that it's effective. And I think where we are right now is we have to overcome objections. We have to deal with them head on. And if we can do that, as well as make vaccinations available, we're going to go from, in Westchester, we'll go from 80% up to 90%, which is probably about as far as we're going to get with the general population.
George Latimer, we just recognized the 20th anniversary of the September 11th attacks, and you have a new 9/11 memorial for first responders who have died of 9/11-related illnesses. What does that mean to you?
Well, I think, you know, what we wanted to do was to, try to make sure that we honor the people that sacrificed tied to 9/11. And the original sculpture in the Kensico Dam Plaza in Westchester County, beautiful sculpture, came in about 15 years ago under my predecessor, Andy Spano, when he was county executive. It's called The Rising, and it's triangular shaped. It evokes the steel skin of the World Trade Center building, and around the ring of it has the names of the 100-some-odd people in Westchester that were lost that day. So what we did is around the circular brick walk that surrounds that sculpture, we put up a low-rise brick wall, and we have some tablets on it with the names of people that we know now to have died from 9/11-related illnesses, and they're almost all first responders, almost all firefighters and police officers, although there are some people in the construction industry as well. They went down on the pile. They worked on the pile. They weren't really told what the chemicals were that they were dealing with. They put their lives at risk, and they contracted cancers, and they died before their time, which is really the same story of the civilians that died on 9/11, as well as the first responders that died on 9/11. Their lives were cut short by this incident. And so we wanted to honor them, and in so doing, we unveiled this. It was very moving. We had a ceremony on 9/11 for that purpose. A lot of the families of the Westchester folks, many of these guys were FDNY and NYPD. They lived in Westchester, but they worked in the city and did this work. And it's heartbreaking to look at families, children who barely knew their fathers are now, 20-year-old children, 25-year-old children, and they're at the monument. And just like I remember seeing at the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C., they're just touching the names that are engraved into the tablet. But we thought that was a respectful thing to do, and unfortunately, we have space on the tablets to add names because we have many more people who right now are fighting off a variety of cancers. And we know that if they do succumb, that they too should be honored in this monument. But we know we did the right thing, and it will stand long after I'm out of office as a statement that we're making as a county to honor these people.
George Latimer, J. Cope. Most people don't even know what J. Cope is, the Joint Commission on Public Ethics. Governor Cuomo, when he was governor, was widely criticized for setting it up because they were the babysitters who were supposed to be babysitting for him, and they didn't do it because they were in debt to him. Let's put it that way. Now, some Republicans and some progressive Democrats are criticizing New York Governor Kathy Hochul's appointments Tuesday to the Joint Commission on Public Ethics, J. Cope. In a statement, New York York GOP chair Nick Langworthy claims the appointments prove he was complicit in former Governor Andrew Cuomo's corrupt regime. Hochul tapped James Deering, a Cuomo appointee originally scheduled to resign in October, to serve as Jacobs' acting chair. The Democrat also appointed Suffolk County District Administrative Judge Randall Heinrichs. She defended her appointments at an Albany news conference. What do you think? You think there's a way to do this and do it right?
Yes, there is a way to do it and do it right. But let me say up front, and I'm not looking to get into a fight, but when the GOP state leader criticizes a Democrat, that's not front page news. They're trying desperately to be relevant in statewide politics, and so they attack Governor Hochul just like they attack every other Democrat. So I don't put any weight into that. When the Republicans have the opportunity to appoint people to positions of authority, they appoint people that are related to their side of the coin, and they tilt the deck in their favor. We had plenty of that in the prior Republican administration, as you well charted during those years. So I don't put any merit into that. I do think that there has to be as much distance and Jacob from people who have existing relationships with those that appoint them or those of us that are even active in government or politics. And I think there are enough very talented people out there. We have an academic population out there of people at some of our major universities. We have people out there who are world-class leaders in business who live in New York but aren't tied to the New York political scene. And I would look for those kinds of appointees to serve as a more objective group of people. None of us who run for public office, want to be outed in the press as having done something or some rule that we broke, and it can be damaging in a political campaign. But Jacob has never really fulfilled its purpose because it has always had the scent around it that it was beholden to a politician who was in office. You can't have that if you want it to perform its function. I know it's hard to do. You know, I have the junior version of it. I have an ethics board in Westchester County that I appoint people to, and they sit and evaluate ethics. I've made it a point to appoint people from both parties, even though I'm the sole appointer. I know the way it works in the state program is you'll get somebody from the Senate Majority Leader's Office or the Senate Minority Leader's Office. You do stuff like that to get some diversity. But when you have those kind of constructs and you have a board of 10, the five people appointed by the minority just fight with the five people in the majority. There's no sense of objective cohesion. So I think you have to look outside the political process. And as I said, I think you've got people in academia and major corporate life all across the state that could serve on a board like that. Obviously it's the governor's prerogative to make those appointments. It's the prerogative of the state Senate to supervise all of those appointments when they come in. When I served in the state Senate, we had our discussions about these appointments. But I do think you really want to keep a long, long, long arm's distance. But I also don't think it's anything more than just cheap politics to try to attack the current governor on the basis of the past governor. All you want to do is run against the past record, and you think that's what's going to get you over the finish line. I don't think that matters. I think what matters in government, me and my race this year and any race that comes in the future, what are you going to do for people going forward? Not just the other guy's a bad guy. What are you going to do? What are my vision for Westchester for the next 4 years? What's somebody else's vision for the state for the next 4 years? And if you can articulate that in specific ways, that matters more than saying, tag, you're it. Because people are really tired of this kind of tag you're at politics, and Jacob has to rise above that.
You mentioned Kathy Hochul. You mentioned the governor's race. I would be remiss in not asking you, are you a Kathy Hochul fan to the point where you think she should be nominated for that position? What do you think?
Well, first of all, I like Kathy a lot. I think she's a very good person. I met with her personally during her lieutenant governorship years on issues that were important. She was always very responsive. I think at this point, as we're having this conversation, still in the month of September, she hasn't been in office a month yet. I think there should be some reasonable period. It's called a honeymoon. I don't really know if it's a honeymoon, but there should be some reasonable amount of time to allow her to do the things that she'd like to do and not necessarily pounce on every single action. She has a very difficult job walking into the governorship in the moment that she did. I was in the state's legislature when David Paterson walked in the aftermath of the Spitzer scandal, but he had a longer period of time. He had 2.5 years, I think, something like that, to work with. So she's coming in the political process, frankly, is probably going to really get started, no later than November 15th of this year because, the nominating conventions will probably be January, February, and it'll be like we're right on top of it. But I do think she should have a window of time around her. And we know the other major names that are speculated, all of those people who have make some decisions. I would just say, sitting here where we are right now, let's give it the chance to try to lay out her agenda and then make an objective assessment. And then, you know, the asking for support and the supporting and who's going to run and who's not going to run, I think that follows. Not a long time from now, but certainly not right this very second. And then I think we'll see better by November, December where we sit.
Well, so I would be remiss in not asking you if Letitia James, the attorney general, whose obvious work led to the Cuomo resignation, would you be for her or Hochul?
I haven't gotten to the point where I'm going to start choosing amongst candidates. Tish James has done a good job as attorney general. I think the work that she's done is admirable. Let me go further. Tom Suozzi, who I know personally, served as county executive in Nassau County as a congressman. I know he's interested. He's been speculated. Steve Ballone is a good friend of mine as a Suffolk County executive. He's been speculated as being interested in it. And, of course, you know, my name's been on a long list of other people as well. So my sense of this is that at this moment in time, it's premature, you know, unless you're a very close ally personally of any one of these people, to say I'm for this person as opposed to that person. I think it does make sense for the process to roll down a little bit. I'm sure, you know, Alan will talk again before the end of the year. And by then, things may become more clear and I'll have a better sense of, you know, where my head is at on this. But I do think that we have a lot of talented people. And I guarantee you one more thing. Nick Langworthy will attack every single one of them.
Our very good friend Yancey Roy told us we should be watching an upcoming meeting of the county executives to see who's scheduled to speak, like, for example, de Blasio or DiNapoli, which might indicate the person interested in running for governor. Can you tell us more whether or not, you know, you guys are looking to see who might show up?
Well, I think, you know, in any session like that, if Tish James comes and Tom DiNapoli comes and Governor Hochul comes, it's expected. They're statewide officers. They hold major positions of authority, and those of us in county government can't really run our counties effectively unless we have relationships with the people in these positions. I've been a longtime friend of Tom DiNapoli's. I stood up for him back in the day when he was attacked by Elliot Spitzer, and I think he's been a terrific controller. If Tom shows up to speak and he speaks about those issues, that's important to me in the running of my county. If he determines that he's going to run for governor, then that, you know, that's another play in the game. As I've said already about Tish and also Governor Hochul, these are all people I've dealt with and I have great respect for. I do think, you know, the tea leaves are that those major statewide players are the first names you go to when you look at where is the talent. And I do think, because I am one of the county executives, that running a county government and running the city of New York are the next most representable executive positions in the state. Now, a county is not a state. Even a big county is not a state. I've been in the state legislature, and the state is much more complicated than even the biggest of counties. But nonetheless, you get a chance to see, when you look at Laura Curran, when you look at Mark Poloncarz and Erie Morris from Nassau County, when you look at how Dan McCoy in Albany, these are tests as county executives that mirror the kind of tests you get as a governor.
Sure.
No county executive has ever become governor in this state history. But the county executives, when we meet and when we talk amongst ourselves, we understand how to evaluate a person who wants to step forward and say, this is what I would do as an executive. It's also helpful, though, I think, to have experience in dealing with the legislature. Having been a member of the state legislature, this state legislature is not, you know, it's not a city council. It is people who've been around for a long time. They know a lot about details of public policy. They don't deal with every single element of state policy, but they have a lot to say about a lot of things. And how you work with the state legislature will say a lot about what kind of a success you'll have were you to become governor.
George Latimer, let me ask you this. One of the biggest problems we have, obviously, is affordable housing. You certainly have it in Westchester County. We know that people are looking everywhere for people to work for them. But if you can't find them a place to live, it can hardly work out. What are your thoughts?
Well, you're absolutely right, Alan. It's one of the biggest issues in Westchester County. In fact, if COVID had never hit, and of course, if we didn't get the flood, and somebody said, what's your biggest challenge? I'd say off the hand, trying to get enough affordable housing in this county to maintain the workforce of the private and public sector people that live here, because we can't afford for them to live 40 miles away and function within our county. What we've done in Westchester, you know, my predecessor, who's running for governor on the Republican side, I was not a big fan of the county being involved in affordable housing. We reversed that, and we've become active in trying to help incentivize affordable housing. We don't develop it directly, but we incentivize it through direct grant money and also through IDA incenting. We put aside $10 million a year the last 2 years for land acquisition, because what really makes affordable housing difficult in the suburbs around New York City is the value of the land. You have an open piece of land. You can sell it to a private developer at market rate, which all of a sudden drives the cost of the construction. And then the units are going at $3,000, $4,000 for a single, for a one-bedroom apartment. That's well above what an average person can afford. So you get the price down if you can get the cost of the land down. Some of it is if you have public land, you can contribute it to that purpose. But many times you don't have that. So we set money aside to buy land. We set money aside, a separate pot of dough, $10 million a year, separate $10 million, for infrastructure improvements. So you need to extend a sewer pipe to make this particular project work. You need a curb cut. You need a traffic light. All of these things, once again, not very sexy, but down in the weeds of what actually is needed to make the thing come together. And it does take local political will, because one of the biggest problems you face is the fear that people have whenever any kind of a new development is coming in. It's going to be more traffic and noise. They don't want it. And it's going to bring in people that they don't want. And we have to fight through that political climate in order to get things done. We're still a home rule state. Local governments, towns, villages, cities still have the right for zoning and planning on these things. And this complication makes getting an affordable housing project very difficult. We just cut the ribbon on 75 units in Greenberg earlier this week. We did a project in Portchester, 35 units. It sounds like small numbers, but day by day, the next project, and we have to chip away at it. But it's hard to do. And a lot of developers say, I'm not going to go through that. I'm just going to go market rate, and here's the price, and there's enough people to pay for it.
George Latimer, I am so sorry. We have an absolute commitment to playing it fair here. And I would never say who should run for governor, but you sort of sound like a good guy who might want to run for governor at some point. So we are out of time. Our guest has been Westchester County Executive George Latimer. George, again, thanks so much for joining us.
Alan, terrific to be with you. I look forward to listening to you next week and your next guest.